As you probably know, most of the Bible lessons are between 25 and 30 minutes long. This one, however, we want you to know right away, is over 38 minutes. We thought about changing it, but because of the content holding together from beginning to end, we left it at a longer length. Do let us know if this is an inconvenience or a problem, or if you like them longer. Thank you.
Welcome to room 4216. I'm so glad you've come.
Hey, Cecilia.
Hey, Pastor Dave.
I don't know why I was thinking about this, but I remember when I was in fifth grade, I had only a little bit of sight, and me and the boys, as it was the boys, were messing around big time in Sunday school. Well, my dad heard about this, and partly because I couldn't see well, but more because I was messing around so much with the boys having fun and not paying attention to the Sunday school lesson, we didn't see my dad sneak in at all. And all of a sudden, I felt his hand on my shoulder, and I only heard one word, David. But with one word, it commanded a host of things, like my death. Do you have any of those from your childhood?
Yeah. Cecilia Noel.
Well, that's your name. It's pretty.
Yes, but when your mother uses it all the time, whether she's angry with you or not, it gets to be not so pretty anymore.
Any others?
Yeah. You've had it. It's curtains.
I remember my dad would say curtains. Yeah. When I'd be talking on the phone, I could hear the newspaper flip. Dave, get off the phone. And I keep on talking, and then I hear the paper flip again. Dave, get off the phone. But it was when the paper dropped. David? Then I, gotta go, bye. Do you have any others?
Yeah, one good one.
Huh?
Supper time.
Master, this has been for thee a busy and eventful day.
Oh, yes, Master. All day thou hast been teaching and healing, and the criticism of the Pharisees has made thy work more severe, tiring, and harassing.
Night is approaching, Master, and still the crowd presses upon thee. We beg of thee, Master, seek a solitary place where thou mayest rest.
Very well, my beloved. We shall cross the lake to the eastern shore.
Yes. There are a few towns and villages over there, but it is a more desolate region. Certainly, Master, thou canst find seclusion there.
My disciples, follow me thither.
The boat is ready.
Quickly, Master. Get into the boat and we shall cast off. Get in, Matthew. Hurry. All right. Andrew, cast off. Those of us who were fishermen will row. Let Philip handle the rudder.
It's getting dark.
The storm. It sounds like we're in for it.
The waves are already higher than the boat, and water's coming over the sides, filling the boat.
Be not afraid, Thomas. We are fishermen, four of us. Many storms have we been through and safely navigated whithersoever we wished. We'll get you safely to the other side.
Yes, we have spent our lives on this lake. Storms, high waves, nothing to us.
With the howling winds and the darkness, surely we will be more...
Start bailing, all of you that aren't rowing, lest the boat be filled with water.
Are we going to sink?
Quiet, Thomas, and bail with your hands. Anything? Any suggestions? Andrew? Peter? Never saw the waves so high or the wind so strong.
Oh, the wind has swept wildly down the gorges along the eastern shore.
It's dark. So dark I can see nothing. Absolutely nothing.
Forget the darkness and bail. Bail. Do we gain any, Peter?
No, the boat continues to fill with water. Oh, we cannot bail, John. We must hang on for our lives.
We'll be drowned. Drowned.
The boat will soon be full and we will drown.
The master. Where is he? Master. Master.
He's there in the stern. Sound asleep. He's fully unaware of the danger to him and to us. He's nearest you, John. Awaken him.
Master. Master, wake up. He's awakening. Master, Lord, save us. We perish.
Peace. Be still.
One day, Jesus said to his disciples, "Let's go over to the other side of the lake." So they got into a boat and set out. As they sailed, he fell asleep. A squall came down on the lake, so that the boat was being swamped, and they were in great danger. The disciples went and woke him, saying, "Master, Master, we're going to drown." He got up and rebuked the wind and the raging waters. The storm subsided, and all was calm. "Where is your faith?" he asked his disciples. In fear and amazement, they asked one another, "Who is this? He commands even the winds and the waters, and they obey him." I'm sitting here in the sunroom of our house, and just a minute or two ago, we had a big boom of thunder. And I said to Carrie, my housemate, "Wow, we are in quite the middle of a storm here."
Yeah, we sure are.
Now, I would call that roll of thunder beautiful. So tell me this. How do you feel about thunderstorms?
Well, I like them when they're, you know, like this.
Mm-hmm. What makes it a thunderstorm like this that you like?
I like the sound. I like the sound of the rain and, you know, the sound of the rolling thunder.
Mm-hmm. So, in general, you like thunderstorms?
In general, I do. The more severe ones, even though they're a little scary, I kind of like the thrill. Now, sometimes when I'm home alone and we get like a severe thunderstorm warning, that gets a little scarier because I don't have anyone to keep me company, and I've been alone during bad storms before, and it's been really scary. So, you know.
So there are times when you don't like thunderstorms.
Yeah. When you get to come and... you know, my imagination starts to run wild.
Right.
Oh my gosh, it's getting really dark, and, you know, and I don't have anyone to, like, share that with, so it's just like, you know.
What do you do when you are afraid in the middle of a storm like that one?
Well, I follow the weather. Mm-hmm. I have both my hearing aids on so that, you know, if the sirens were to go off unexpectedly, you know, I'd be able to hear them and go down the stairs.
Mm-hmm.
So my alertness just kind of goes up.
Does your dependence on God, knowing, you know, that he's got mastery over the storm, have you found that that helps?
Sometimes, yeah.
Okay, I'm glad you're honest.
Yeah.
It's hard to remember sometimes that he's
sometimes
there.
Sometimes it is. There's always sort of that underlying feeling that, hey, you know, A, this is a short-lived. B, God is there. I am protected.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, when I remember that, then it does bring me some comfort.
Well, thank you for sharing with us. And we'll just sit back and enjoy the rest of this storm since we're safe inside.
You're welcome. Absolutely.
So, did you find anyone who doesn't like storms that we can interview?
Well, not really. I talked to one person, but they didn't want to be on air because the storms bothered them so bad they didn't want to admit that storms bothered them verbally out loud.
Yeah, but we need someone to talk about why they hate storms.
Well, okay. I talked to one other person, and they said, well, interview a child. And then she paused and said, or my dog, because I was out on a walk and the thunder hit and that dog just stopped and we had to turn right around and go back home. So, I complied.
Wait a minute.
Oh, my name is Nelson Goodboyd, and I am a good dog, except I do not like storms, I do not. And then when the thunder comes, and I get very scared, and then I run and I try to hide in the shower, but it is still there, and then I try to hide under the couch, but it is still there, and then I cannot get away from it. And then my people, they give me my special treat. And then I get all calm and, oh yes, I feel much better. And the storm does not bother me so much.
I learned from these interviews is there's a different type of fear when it comes to storms. Well, like this. I don't like to get shots. Needles poked in me.
Really?
When I was a kid, I had many eye surgeries, and those needles seemed like they were about 6 inches long, and they went all the way through my leg, and it was painful. Well, some people don't like pain. And so they're fearful of shots. They're fearful of doctors because of pain.
Mm-hmm.
Storms, though, are potential. When thunder comes, the rain comes, if someone is afraid of that, they're afraid of what next might come. A tornado, broken down house, a tree falling on them. And that's where I find a lot of people, kids, dogs, don't like storms is because of fear of potential. And it all is because they're not in control.
You know, you're right. I don't like being outside during a storm because I'm afraid of potentially being struck by lightning.
Mm-hmm. You're not in control.
I don't like fireworks. Well, I don't like fireworks shot off by non-professionals because
you might get hit.
Yes.
You're not in control. Stuff coming at you. That is a understandable fear. And where and what do we do about that? Well, I think I'm not saying these next words are going to magically or supernaturally or spiritually poof away the fears. But when we are trusting in a God who controls those things that are not in our control, that means we're placing our life in Him. That means we are trusting He is in control. And if something bad happens, He will provide. By the way, did you ever think about it with the disciples? Jesus might have thought, heck, buds, if this boat goes down with me in it, I'm going down with you. It's nice to know that God is in our boat, isn't it?
It is.
When the breeze turns into a gale, I know the master of the wind. I know the maker of the rain. He can calm the storm, make the sun shine again. I know the master of the wind.
We continue reading Luke chapter 8. Verses 26 through 39.
They sailed to the region of the Gerasenes, which is across the lake from Galilee. When Jesus stepped ashore, he was met by a demon-possessed man from the town. For a long time, this man had not worn clothes or lived in a house, but had lived in the tombs. When he saw Jesus, he cried out and fell at his feet, shouting at the top of his voice,
"What do you want with me, Jesus, Son of the Most High God? I beg you, don't torture me."
For Jesus had commanded the evil spirit to come out of the man. Many times it had seized him, and though he was chained hand and foot and kept under guard, he had broken his chains and had been driven by the demon into solitary places. Jesus asked him, "What is your name?"
Legion,
he replied, because many demons had gone into him, and they begged him repeatedly not to order them to go into the abyss. A large herd of pigs was feeding on the hillside. The demons begged Jesus to let them go into them, and he gave them permission. When the demons came out of the man, they went into the pigs, and the herd rushed down the embankment into the lake and were drowned. When those tending the pigs saw what had happened, they ran off and reported this in the town and the countryside, and the people went out to see what had happened. When they came to Jesus, they found the man from whom the demons had gone out sitting at Jesus' feet, dressed and in his right mind. And they were afraid. Those who had seen it told the people how the demon-possessed man had been cured. Then all the people of the region of the Gerasenes asked Jesus to leave them because they were overcome with fear. So he got into the boat and left. The man from whom the demons had gone out begged to go with him, but Jesus sent him away, saying, "Return home and tell how much God has done for you." So the man went away and told all over the town how much Jesus had done for him. Good story.
Indeed it is.
And perfect for some questions.
Indeed it is. Yes, ma'am.
First, why did the demons send the man to hide among the tombs? I mean, we all know that demons are obnoxious, obstreperous, rude, blasphemous, and that they want to cause as much trouble as possible.
They were running from the chains. They wanted to show that they were stronger than any human being and any might that humans could hold. And not only will they break the chains, but they'll take this person wherever they wanted to, and they're going to go to places that no living human being really wants to go to, among the dead. And so it was a greater scare tactic for them to do that.
Hmm. Okay. They said to Jesus, send us into the pigs, don't send us to the abyss.
Mm-hmm. Which is amazing, because just as I said, they wanted to be in charge, in control, greater than any human, and now they were begging, please, please. Well, not quite like that, but they met their match in Jesus.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so they get sent into the pigs.
Uh-huh.
The pigs go rushing down the hill, kersh, splash into the lake, and they drown.
Mm-hmm.
Did the demons get sent into the abyss anyway?
I don't know. Oh. The abyss, by the way, means hell.
Right.
I'm guessing, yes, they did get sent back there, but I don't know that for sure.
But it showed that Jesus was in control.
Absolutely. Now, some people will make something of this about the pigs. I don't think so myself, but I'm going to make note of it, that to a Jew, pigs, they're abhorrible, they're dirty, they're filthy, according to their ceremonial Old Testament laws. And so for Jesus to send them into the pigs was a perfect place for these slime ball demons to go into the slime ball animals, because they were dirty according to Levitical law.
Mm, but later we learned that they were not necessarily dirty, that it was perfectly okay to
have pigs. And so we eat pork and bacon and things today. Yeah, primarily those ceremonial laws were to keep the people in their view holy, but actually healthy. Because of trigonosis, they had to thoroughly cook pig. And they didn't always thoroughly cook it because they didn't have the thermometers that are hooked up to your iPhones with a Bluetooth beep, 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 saying it's now up to a temperature. So, yeah. That was God's way of keeping them safe.
And then the people come out and they see this man who had been totally out of his mind. He's dressed and he's sitting at Jesus' feet and he's fine now.
Yeah, in his right mind, I think it even says. And this is a visual thing. I remember seeing almost something like this, and The only way I can go even all of a sudden, oh, hi. It's a drastic change of appearance. And visually, that can be done by, just by looking at someone with the eyes, the way they look, and are piercing, or it's almost like eyes can smile because the face smiles. You can see, the eyes turn up and they're happy and smiling. They could see a huge difference in this guy.
So why weren't they happy?
Hmm.
Why weren't the people rejoicing? And, oh, whoa, look at what Jesus has done.
Two reasons, maybe three. One, they've just met somebody who tossed out the demons that they couldn't control. This, they knew he was a mightier power. And they weren't ready to come to grips with that at all.
Okay.
And so they were afraid because this is a mightier power that they couldn't control him either. Second, they just lost a chunk of money. And they're afraid, what else is this dude going to do in making me lose money?
Because of the herd of pigs that they lost.
Yes. And if they knew he was Jewish, they would have thought, ah, he's just going to condemn us anyway for these pigs, and that's probably why he did it, rather than even asking or trusting like the man did.
Oh.
And it is amazing to put in contrast, the people said to Jesus, go away. And the man said, can I come with you? He wanted to be with Jesus. They didn't want to be with Jesus. And what did Jesus say? Go and tell everyone what you have seen, what God has done.
He didn't ask him to do anything easy by staying back.
Mm-mm, not at all. And just like the storm, Jesus did this with a word.
But what good will it do?
He can heal me.
Oh, there is no cure for the disease you have, and you know it.
I have faith that Jesus can heal me.
Faith, faith, faith. You always go back to that as an excuse. Well, you've spent a lot of time and money on physicians and remedies. With what result? You've been pronounced incurable.
But Jesus can cure all diseases, even mine. He will heal me.
How are you so sure he will?
Through faith.
Oh, there you go again. Faith, faith. Well, physicians can't cure you. What makes you think Jesus can? Except by faith, as you put it.
Jesus has all the power of heaven at his command.
Well, you beat all I ever heard of. I know you'll be disappointed, but I warned you.
Jesus is going with that man to his home. Perhaps he will come to me. No. No, I must seek him. Make known to him my need. Oh, if only I might touch him.
Step aside. Step aside, Master.
Make way,
make way,
let him through, please.
Make way.
Let him through.
Who touched me?
Oh, Lord, I touched the hem of thy garment and was healed. For 12 years I have suffered pain and was feeble. For many days I have followed thee, trying to get close enough to make known my great need of thy help. I touched thee, Lord, and was made well.
Daughter, be of good comfort. Thy faith hath made thee whole. Go in peace.
Continuing Luke chapter 8, verses 40 to the end of the chapter, verse 56.
Now when Jesus returned, a crowd welcomed him, for they were all expecting him. Then a man named Jairus, a ruler of the synagogue, came and fell at Jesus' feet, pleading with him to come to his house, because his only daughter, a girl of about 12, was dying. As Jesus was on his way, the crowds almost crushed him, and a woman was there, who had been subject to bleeding for 12 years, but no one could heal her. She came up behind him and touched the edge of his cloak, and immediately her bleeding stopped. "Who touched me?" Jesus asked. When they all denied it, Peter said, "Master, the people are crowding and pressing against you." But Jesus said, "Someone touched me. I know that power has gone out of me." Then the woman, seeing that she could not go unnoticed, came trembling and fell at his feet. In the presence of all the people, she told why she had touched him and how she had been instantly healed. Then he said to her, "Daughter, your faith has healed you. Go in peace." While Jesus was still speaking, someone came from the house of Jairus, the synagogue ruler. "Your daughter is dead," he said. "Don't bother the teacher anymore." Hearing this, Jesus said to Jairus, "Don't be afraid. Just believe, and she will be healed." When he arrived at the house of Jairus, he did not let anyone go in with him except Peter, John, and James, and the child's father and mother. Meanwhile, all the people were wailing and mourning for her. "Stop wailing," Jesus said. "She is not dead, but asleep." They laughed at him, knowing that she was dead. But he took her by the hand and said, "My child, get up." Her spirit returned, and at once she stood up. Then Jesus told them to give her something to eat. Her parents were astonished, but he ordered them not to tell anyone what had happened. Again, another interesting story. Well, two stories in one.
Indeed. And it's interesting why the writer Luke would have woven them together. But you pointed out a very good reason why. And I have another one, too. First, the woman who was bleeding 12 years. That's about how old this girl was who died.
Mm-hmm.
They're woven together because of the time. But second, these two are woven together because they are woven together with the last couple of stories. With a word, Jesus did it.
Hmm. All right. Are you willing to answer some more questions?
I'm going to try.
What sickness did these two people have? Or sicknesses?
Sicknesses. Well, with the little girl who died, we don't know. Nothing. There's no information to even go by.
Was she really dead?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. The Bible, in the New Testament in particular, and this we did do some reading about, talks about sleep, talks about death as sleep, even like Lazarus, when he was dead. He's sleeping. Jesus referred to that.
Mm-hmm.
And from God's point of view, they are only sleeping.
That is true.
Yeah. But they know when a person's dead, and the spirit has left the body. So no, this girl was dead. Now, as far as the disease from the woman, 12 years of hemorrhaging will mean it's more than just a monthly cycle gone wry, that there's some constant bleeding, and it would be a bleeding of the uterus, because it also made her unclean. And that was something that was defined by Old Testament law, because bleeding many times shared diseases, and to be unclean means you had to be separated to keep other people from being clean, so they don't get the diseases. And sometimes they went overboard with it, but they had to, because they didn't know what we know today about science. And so separation, isolation, what's the other word? Quarantine was necessary.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And so for her, she knew what going near Jesus meant. It meant if she was found out, as she was, she could get in some serious trouble and get him in some serious trouble.
Or did it mean, as she believed, I would be healed?
Mm.
Mm. Very interesting. By the way, she did touch Jesus. Technically, that made him unclean. Then Jesus went to this little girl, touched the dead girl. He was double unclean.
I hadn't thought of it like that.
The first unclean was done in front of Jairus, who was the head of the synagogue.
Ooh.
He was the one who had to approve clean and unclean people. And he let Jesus come into his house.
Which could have made the house unclean.
Oh, it did. But Jesus made it all clean because he gave the touch of healing and hope and life.
Speaking of healing, there are some phrases that made my alarm bells go off.
Mm.
If you believe, your faith has healed you.
Yeah, and Jesus even said, just believe to Jairus when the news came, your daughter is dead. Just believe, mm-hmm. just believe.
Mm-hmm. And then, of course, there's the touching of the edge of his clothing. Mm-hmm. It almost makes it seem as though his cloak is a magic cloak, that if she just touches it, she's healed. Mm-hmm. Then, of course, there's the whole if you believe and the faith. If you have enough faith, you'll be healed. Can you explain all this?
I'll peel off some of this. Hopefully I can. First off, when Jesus said to the Father, just believe, it means just trust God. Just be related and cling to your daddy in heaven. It doesn't mean you have power. It just is have faith in God. And it is a relationship word. Trust in him. And that's exactly what this woman did. Now, it's not a magical garment. It was a magical person. And it wasn't any old cloak. It was his cloak. Her faith was in Jesus, not the cloak. Not the cloak. And I want to point that out. Our faith should be in Jesus. Now, we talked about this ahead of time. Mm-hmm. And because of that, I pulled the Greek off the shelf and looked at this. And in the first two instances where it says heal, verses 43 and 47, it is a form of physical healing or therapeutic.
Mm-hmm.
But actually in 48, when Jesus says, woman, your faith has
healed you,
it's not that same word at all. It's a form of a different word. The King James probably says it best. We looked at that. It says,
your faith has made you whole.
Whole. Sozo is a Greek word which means in A number one, saved, meaning like you were lost and now are spiritually found. Mm. Once in hell, now in heaven. Number two is made whole or well, which makes sense because if you were spiritually lost, you need to be spiritually found and made whole and well again. And the third definition of sozo can be a healing. But it's usually on the heels of something spiritual. Mm-hmm. And just to say healed does not mean, it doesn't carry the impetus that the Greek is trying to relate here. That it's not a therapeutic physical healing. Jesus is speaking about, you are made well. You are a complete person. You could die today, but it didn't matter because you are complete. You are whole. You trust in me. You are saved.
So that is why we can believe mm-hmm. that it's not an if you have enough faith, then you will be healed.
Mm-hmm.
It's the Greek. It's going back to the way it was originally said.
Correct. So we started the podcast talking about things that were said by our parents. Sometimes two words, like Cecilia Noel, or like me, David. Well, the point is one word from a parent carries a huge amount of authority, understanding,
and
implications, power. And so it is here with these four wrapped together. Jesus stood up and calmed the storm. He said to the demon, be gone. Really, he didn't say a word to the woman, but there was power. And then to Jairus, he actually said a couple things.
Daughter.
Believe, mm-hmm. and then get up. So the Word of God, God who made the heavens and earth, he has said some things to us of therapeutic healing, of casting out demons, but of salvation. And he shows that he has power over wind and the waves and the demons and death itself. So when he says, I love you, I trust in you, these are words we can take.
And he says three other words to us. But first, if you want to write to us, do so at
Dasher and Prancer. And
wrong season.
Oh, sorry. N-E-T.
And the three words he says to us. You are not alone.
Do come back again to room 4216.
Credits. Master of the Wind. Performed by Candy Christmas from the album Fully Alive. Copyright 2010, Bridge Records. The Bible in Living Sound, episodes 284 and 285. Available at www.bibleinlivingsound.org. Music Box Record Player, Fisher Price. Oh, where has my little dog gone? 1971. Interlude musicians Terry Nord and Robert Vaughn.